Who's the villain in the homeowner story? Well, it's many. The first one is the lack of affordable housing. Secondly, restrictive zoning that prevents a variety of housing types. Just restrictive zoning. Okay, we can talk about that.
Industry professionals?
No.
Training?
Well, that is a problem.
Lack of
construction labor. Of lack of trained or quality construction labor. You see, you've got codes as it relates to land use. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about codes as it relates to building system. Affordable pricing. Qualifying for a house. Loan qualification to be able to create a mortgage.
Yeah.
Proximity to work is an issue.
Well, maybe the internet will take care of some of that, but
well, it has taken care of a good bit of it. Another problem that directly impacts home ownership is the inability to qualify for a loan. When you have too many roadblocks, you can often give up. So it makes them feel frustrated,
defeated,
and it's totally unnecessary. The globalist movement to have everyone, there's a globalist movement that says you will own nothing, and you'll be happy. I think that's bullshit. Okay. The great wealth created in the United States was hugely the consequence of stability. Stability within our family structure, and stability for our basic needs for shelter, food, and safety, those things. And that was, housing was a huge part of that story. That's why when the GI Bill was introduced to help these men and women returning from World War II to get into housing that they could afford, was a huge benefit to our overall GDP and financial growth of our country. There's lots of things that went on there. Now let's look at when we started to see a decline. The decline started in the 60s when our federal policies and legislation began to destroy the family as a consequence of entitlement programs. When the father was, the family was incentivized for the father to leave. True. When a woman could make more money or get more money from the government because she didn't have a man in the house, therefore, he was not around. When I was with the Big Brother program, I had a little brother named Stevie, and Stevie's mother, Stevie's dad was not present in his life for that reason. They lived in a government housing, and if she worked in an effort to better herself and her children, then her subsidies would be cut out. So what she did to work was under the table. She did waitress work, cleaning houses, doing things where she wasn't reporting on in taxes. And also when Stevie had brothers and sisters with different dads. And so no man was a permanent fixture in his life. And that's why he was partially involved in the Big Brother program.
One thing is the American dream, to own your own home. You know, so does that diminish the American dream that future Americans may not be able to afford or get or have?
Well, you either are an owner or you are a renter. And when you are a renter, the benefit of that is the owner is responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of your housing. unless, of course, you're responsible for its destruction. And at that point, you know, then you can get yourself in trouble. But a landlord wants you there because he's making money off of you. Now, if you buy your own house and you pay for it in a timely fashion, and you've got it paid for, now you have shelter that you've eliminated the necessity of mortgage payments or rent. You still have your upkeep and maintenance and taxes and so forth, but you're so much better off financially if you own your home. Home ownership being one of the tenets of the American dream, it absolutely is.
So is the real issue, core issue, is it the ability to own a home? The ability.
Well, it's no longer just that. It's no longer just that, because what's happened in our country, and this is escalating, it's not de-escalating, is adequate housing. And if you don't think it's an issue, you go to any major city and look at what's going on in some of the overpasses, where you have whole tent cities under these overpasses. Well, it's a very real issue.
So adequate, I mean, that word could mean many different things. And I guess to fully understand the scope of that word.
Well, let me make it pretty simple. It gets down to having shelter where you have heat in the winter and cool in the summer as you need it. You have adequate sanitation facilities so that you yourself can be clean and you're secure. You're in a
safe and secure
in shelter where you are not threatened by somebody invading your shelter.
Well, I kind of think it's scalable as well, because, you know, if you had a specific kind of job, wouldn't you need a different, you know, or if you had a larger family, if we looked at it from that direction, then you would need, then your adequate changes, the requirements that for your home is now different. So it may not be the same for every person.
And it will not be the same for every person. But certainly a family where you've got...
But the underlying principles are still there, right?
Correct.
Safety, security.
Security and sanitation.
Good sanitation. Yeah. You know, space.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a larger family, then you have enough adequate space.
Right.
You know, for your shelter. So I think that's a really good term to really kind of wrap around what the root cause of what's going on, because it is scalable, and that's kind
of has to be.
Yeah. And that's kind of the issue. So, and in the opposite direction, if you're a single person, how in the world are you ever going to be able to afford something that's that's adequate, right? Because now adequate is priced so much far beyond.
There's a kind of a point counterpoint to that one, and the how are you going to afford it? You can afford it because you're not supporting the family. Right. You can afford it because it's just you, and you can live in. And 500 or 600 square feet of space, if that's your comfort level, and have the security and the safety and sanitation that you need to live in.
Right. So now we're talking about the size of the shelter, right?
Well, that's your scalable issue.
Right.
If you're just one person, you can have something smaller, but if you've got four children, you obviously are going to need some additional bedrooms.
So if you're single, then it's over adequate.
Well, that's
a 2,000 square foot home, and then that's all that's available, and you don't need a 2,000 square foot. Then it's over adequate. Then it's too much.
It's not. It's either
because
adequate
and you can't afford
it. Adequate. It's inadequate. It's
inadequate, and
That's good. A good question. What's the word we want when it's. Excessive is the word. It's either adequate or it's excessive.
Well, it becomes unaffordable.
Or it's inadequate.
It becomes unaffordable.
Well, it can be. Depending on that's an income issue. But
still, that qualifies as being adequate or inadequate, right? So now, will it fill your needs? Yes. Do you need that much space? No. Can you afford that much space? No. So maybe there's another adjective to go with it, but I kind of feel like there's, you know, adequate shelter is like the baseline.
I think if we, you know, that we ask the question, if you're the listener, then you say, you know, you've got to have thought about what is the housing model that you wish to see, that you see yourself in, not just for yourself, but should you have a family, what is the housing model that is ideal for your family? And if not ideal, which is adequate for your family? I guess that is ideal, but I mean, you know, what is your ideal can be many different things. Depends on your lifestyle considerations. You know, when I was single and I lived in one half of a duplex in Dallas, Texas, it had three bedrooms and two bathrooms and a nice living room and dining room kitchen, and it was more than I needed, but I lived in all of it. You know, I had one of the bedrooms was my office, the other bedroom was the guest room, but it was a very comfortable house, and it looked good, and you know, all that stuff. But when I, you know, and now, and when I got married, and I certainly planned to have a family, then I knew that I needed a different kind of house.
You know, adequate housing should be available for all size families and individuals. And we define adequate housing as having security and good sanitation.
Adequate housing should be available. Well, you know, I'm careful with the word should. But does that mean just because you have 10 children and you've decided not to work that the housing should be available to you? No, it doesn't work that way. This is, you know, this is an issue of, are you being responsible in the way that you've conducted your life to be able to have a home? Now, when you've been responsible and the system is working against you, that's a different issue. You know, and that's what we have going on today. There's a lot of people out there, like my daughter and her husband, who make a six-figure income, and they can't afford to buy a house.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Well, you know, maybe available is the wrong word. You know, housing, it should be allowed.
It is allowed.
You know, I was just thinking about what you said about the individual being able to afford something, and they should take responsible for affording it in that regard. So, you know, we're allowing them to do so, or not we, but I mean, just us as a society, you know, allowing them to have the size of home that's going to be adequate for them, instead of restricting them. So this goes back to all the regulations and zoning and things. You know, if the zoning says, hey, you can't build that little tiny home here.
And your zoning restrictions are part of that. That says, look, this neighborhood is zoned for 2,000 plus square foot homes, so you can't build a 1,200 square foot home in here. It's not going to protect and preserve the value of the other houses in here. So you need to meet this minimum requirement. Okay, I personally think there lies part of the problem. Now, there's been a lot of different housing developments who have addressed a variety of housing models so that they appeal to a much broader mix of people. So the 55 plus community is a good example of how a demographic has been targeted for housing, but they restrict it in a way that doesn't allow your grandchildren to live with you if they need to. If you got your grandchildren coming,
facilities.
No, your grandchildren can't come to you, can't live with you, because you're in a 55 plus community. Yeah. You may live independently, and you may be able to live independently for another 30 years or so, but your grandchildren are not going to be allowed to live with you.
You're saying all that, I think about just the loss of freedom. Quite simply.
Well, it is a loss of freedom, because we've created these, you know, we've created exclusivity, and we've created enclaves and restricted neighborhoods, and that's, you know, There's a portion of that that makes sense, but on the other hand, we're at a really interesting place in our in the culture of the United States where it doesn't work anymore. So, you know, there's communities in the United States who have now done away with the ban on ADUs. An ADU is an auxiliary dwelling unit. An ADU might be that little casita or cottage that you put in your backyard. It's hooked up to your power and your sanitation, sewer grid or septic grid, and your water. But that's where your mom lives. But she's got her...
The pool house.
She's got her... she's got her privacy and her semblance of her independence. But she's there in your sight line for you to be of assistance to her as she may need it. Or it may be your adult child that just the job market is just not providing them the income level that they need to have the house in a more conventional setting on their own. But they want, likewise, they want their independence and their privacy. So they're in the little cottage in the back.
Are we going to rename the mother-in-law suite as the teenager in the basement suite? Or the man-child suite?
Well, the whether it's the mother-in-law fem lounge or whatever you want to call it. I mean, but it's addressing the same problem. You've got this broad demographic of peoples, whether they're single individuals, whether they're millennials or they're getting ready to kick the bucket.
There's no in-between.
Their living needs are very different.
Yeah, there's no in-between.
Not much of one. There's some, but there's not much.
There's a real lack of flexibility in the marketplace.
Well, there's a housing model that allows for multi-generational living, and what that means is the grandparents, the parents, the adult children, or the children, and if you have adult children, the grandchildren can share a house. That's very cultural in many countries. It's very cultural in India. It's very cultural in Mexico. It's not unusual in a lot of our foreign countries because they've always done that. It's a huge
part of the culture.
Part of the culture and a comfort to those families to know that your child is going to be able to come home and relate to their grandparents on a daily basis. That's a very different housing model. We see this in a huge variety of our different cultural communities that are out there. Then you have another whole wave of housing that's needed for people who have special needs, and I'm not talking about people who are necessarily debilitated in an unfunctional way, although there's certainly some of those. But if you've got a child who has Down syndrome, or you have a child that has Asperger's or something that really requires that they have a little bit of help, you can design a housing model where they can, again, have their independence and they're also their dependence when that's required. So I think that we have to reconsider all of this. Mm-hmm. Now, you can do that in a standard family, single-family home, but there are other ways to make that quality of life that's created by that need just better. Just look what happened to us over the past 2 years. When we were mandated to shelter in place, when we were restricted from gathering five or more people, you couldn't even have your family over for Thanksgiving. What was the consequence of all that? Depression.
Depression, yeah.
Divorce. Abuse. None of it was really good. If you'd had a multi-generational family in one household where you had grandchildren, adult children, parents, grandparents, where you got the support that you would need from your family, you would have been much better off.
Support.
Emotionally. Yeah. And spiritually. And very likely financially. Which is a good segue into talking about a huge trend that's beginning to emerge called co-housing. Co-housing may be where the grandparents and the parents come together to buy the house, or the grandparents, the parents, and the adult children buy the house, and they share the expense of that house so that they can live in a nice home and each contribute to the expense of that in a way that doesn't break someone financially.
You know, I have an 18-year-old son living in my basement. So there's no real place for him to go. You know, he has money for college, and he may even get a scholarship, get the Hope Scholarship, but you know, that doesn't mean he has, I certainly don't have any money to help him with college. So he has money for tuition, but there's no money for housing. Okay, so you had already told your story. I mean, you mentioned it in the previous statement, but you said, you know, your daughter, so they're living in Atlanta? Or no?
I live in Wilmington.
Wilmington. And they're renting now?
They're renting. And their rent is going up 30%. 30.
I feel like I barely met the cutoff. You know, I escaped from the corporate world and was able to buy a home, which I knew I never could do as an entrepreneur, as a business owner in my industry. I knew the bank would never loan me money. So I got a full-time job. And then while I had a full-time job, I purchased a home. And by the time I signed the papers on the home, I quit my full-time job. I mean, I literally leveraged employment to buy a home to be able to pursue the lifestyle I wanted to pursue.
You planned, what do I need to do to meet the requirement for a mortgage? And once I met that requirement, when the mortgage institution was satisfied that I was going to make my payments for my house, I then had the freedom to go do my own thing with the understanding that my obligation to the mortgage company was still the same. I had to make my payments, but I was no longer relegated to my full-time job.
I knew what I believe I could do as an income, but I had to choose a home that was
within your means.
Yeah, well, you know, and pretty much off the grid at that point. You know, and 15 years ago, you know, moving to LJ was basically off the grid. I knew I would never be able to afford anything in the city. That was just
the added expense of living in the city made that housing model for you and your family unattainable.
Right.
Okay. So that's what I was saying that. See, if you start looking at all the different types of, you know, we talk about neighborhoods or towns, cities, neighborhoods, villages, whatever you want to label it, they're all have carved out a demographic that is suitable for that area. You know, whether it's cultural or it's economic, there's so many different ways so many influences that will determine where you decide you're going to live. So as we start, and I think our catchphrase is always going to be, how are you going to create shelter? How are you going to create this for yourself?
And or for your family.
And your family, right.
Yeah.
What are the decisions that you need to make to be able to get there?